Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. This is Dave. How are you doing?
Hey, Dave. This is Ed.
Great, great. Thanks for your promptness.
Yeah, man.
Let's spend a few minutes looking at any questions that you have or clarifications or things you haven't learned so far that you would hope you'd learn. We're going to be talking about best practices and success structures for business and some about fees and that sort of thing, about the coaching business. But I want to be sure that we're going to cover everything that would be of best interest to you. And any questions that you have still? Anyone? Could I get a management of the background noise, please, a star six, so that we can have discussion and I don't have to go to lecture mode? When there's a number of people on the line, it's especially helpful to be on star six until you're ready to talk, and then be sure to go back off of star six after you do move to be ready to talk again. So questions, thoughts, things you'd like us to discuss briefly?
Hey, this is Ed again.
Thanks. Go ahead.
The link, because I missed last week. I went up to get the link, and the audio file's not there from last week's group.
It's not posted yet?
No, it tells me that the audio file that I'm looking for is not there.
Okay, I will. They should be there by noon the following day. I will get Bill to post both that one and tonight's.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry that it wasn't there. You're still in good shape. It's not like a sequence, but I do believe that it would be helpful to go back and do
that. Yeah, that was a particularly good group for me, but I'm looking forward to catching up on it. Yeah, thank you.
Okay, all right, great. I'm going to add a couple of things as I look about what I had put together based on a couple of the questions that some of you have sent in, and also I just completed a teleseminar series on influence, persuasion, and neural marketing. The psychology of influence, the science of persuasion, and neural marketing. And I want to include some things that I think might be helpful to you from there, and use something from that offering as an example of a how-to. So I'll be sure we carve out plenty of time for that. Other thoughts or questions or things for us to talk about? How have you found the workbook components of the outline for each of the seminars thus far? Have they been useful to you to do some of your specific work on your business using that, using the workbook and the exercises and work pages? Yes, no, maybe, or haven't done it yet? Any? Yes.
Anybody else is out there? I didn't want to talk over.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, actually, and you know, I went ahead and signed up for the coaching with Lori, and so I'm finding that I'm also getting some reinforcement. But the practice pieces, I can already tell that I'm going to really have to focus in on the goal setting and the visualizing. Because I'm sitting back on that. I've done a lot of the business model planning and stuff, but it's all very, very helpful. And I really appreciate being able to go back to the audio and pick up.
Yeah, great. Well, you'll have a jump start on your practice as well as the training and doing this, and I think be really benefited in terms of establishing a practice. That's often the most challenging thing. For someone who hasn't come from a background, especially of setting and collecting professional fees and working in your own profession in that way, it's a challenge to make that transition. So for those of you who've had experience doing that, that's great. But as I made a transition from practicing psychiatry and psychoanalysis, coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. And the aspects of marketing and those aspects, I think, are ones that really need to be given attention. There was a survey that over 90% of professionals across the board believe that a significant portion of what they need to do to generate and sustain a practice has to do with aspects of marketing and selling, but then they were asked in a survey to really nail down how much they actually did. Less than 10% of them were actually spending time doing that. So it's something that I think is a good thing that each of you are thinking about this, and I think you'll see that it'll have a significant return on investment. Any other thoughts or questions before we move into our topic? Okay, we'll have some time at the end, so jot down any questions or comments you have, and we'll come back and have a discussion at the end. Okay, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about, in our final seminar, the business aspects of your practice, the best practices and success structures. Ira Gershwin, the great American composer, had something to say about this topic. Someone asked Gershwin, what comes first, the words or the music? And his answer, the contract. Let's talk first about comfort zones. A comfort zone is a familiar pattern of behavior. It's a default mode of feeling, thinking, or acting. It's something that we've wired into our brains and have created an entire software program. It's a gradual process, but once established, resists change, simply because the ways our brain work. Think of a comfort zone like a home thermostat. If the temperature increases or decreases, even a degree or two, it signals an adjustment to return to the set point, the comfort zone. Our minds and brains both contribute. We have a comfort zone with everything from weight to money. We return to the familiar even if we don't like it, even when it's uncomfortable. So it's really a zone of familiarity. A comfort zone is predictable and automatic. We know the outcome. Now, think about how subtle a comfort zone can be in determining choices. What you eat, the difficulty of starting a new exercise program, and, especially if you're not accustomed to it, the challenge to set and collect professional fees and have that be commensurate with your worth and the value that you bring. Here's an example of a comfort zone in action. Most lottery winners manage to spend or give away their newfound earnings to return to their previous situation. In fact, in the U.S., 80% of lottery winners over $3 million file bankruptcy within the first 5 years. Their money changed, but their mindsets didn't. So much money moved them from a comfort zone, and they ended up returning to it. Your performance, even the money you make, operates in a similar way. In the beginning, departure from a comfort zone feels, by definition, uncomfortable. It's a rupture of continuity. A routine is broken. As you get more successful, you may feel vaguely uncomfortable, just different. If the results go outside a self-image, you have to be aware of the internal thermostat being cued to return to the comfort zone. And comfort zones, like habits, are not definitions. They're simply choices that get repeated. This means that you can create a new story and a new set point, a new comfort zone. A comfort zone is simply an unconscious thermostat until it becomes conscious. Then you can reprogram your mind and rewire your brain. As we mentor and co-create change, we have to start where the client is, not where we are. And think about this, because so many of the methods to facilitate change are contrary to how the mind and the brain work. So let's look first at the changes you'll be going through. And here's something you didn't learn in high school or college. I didn't even learn it in medical school. A fact or a belief is a physical reality in the brain. Prior knowledge is held in neural networks traveling accustomed neuronal pathways. This knowledge or belief can't simply be removed or just overwritten by a new or better belief. A teacher can't present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from a student's brain. This is why fixing doesn't work. You can't just list the four reasons an idea is wrong and expect it's going to rearrange someone's neural network. Part of leaving a comfort zone may be to speak openly about money, because you're going to have to every time you have a discussion, a brief discussion with someone about coaching, to see what the challenges, their issues are, and describe what you do. You're going to have to conclude with what you offer, including the structure and the amount of the fee. So here's an illustration. An agent, an internationally known literary agent, was at a writer's conference and discussed working with her authors over the years. This was one I attended a number of years ago. She talked about the details of some of her contract negotiations. Someone in the audience said, this was not me, by the way, would you talk about how much money is involved in the book deals so we can get an idea of what to expect? She looked kind of shocked, and her immediate response was, well, I've always felt that you don't talk about money. And she was looking as if she were trying to compose herself. There was an older gentleman in the back row, that was also not me, said, I thought once you finish the book, you finally do talk about money. You shut down your computer, change out of your sweatpants, and start selling your book. Well, of course he was right. His frankness and confrontation sparked a lively discussion about money and contracts. The presenter revealed specific figures involved and went on to lead a discussion that was really useful to her audience, many of whom were interested in writing books for a living. A therapist once wrote this: money questions will be treated by cultured people in the same manner as sexual matters, with the same inconsistency, prudishness, and hypocrisy. The year 1913. Just over a century ago, the therapist, Sigmund Freud. Over a century later, most of us have learned to talk more easily about sex, yet may remain seclusive, embarrassed, or conflicted about certain aspects of our own money stories. One of the great philosophers of the 21st century said, when you don't speak something, you make it more powerful. That was Harry Potter. Let's talk about an exercise, money cruise control. Some of you may have done this from the work pages. Each of us internally has an amount of money we feel comfortable attracting into our lives. A car is on cruise control. When it comes to a hill and starts to lag, cruise control accelerates so it stays the same speed. When it goes downhill, it adjusts to maintain the speed. Here's an example. I heard Jack Canfield tell about his stepdad. Jack's stepdad was a regional manager for NCR in the late 70s, early 80s. He noticed that each of his salespeople had a particular image of himself as a salesperson. Someone saw themselves as a $2,000 a month salesperson or a $3,000 a month salesperson. If a salesperson's self-image was that he earned $3,000 a month in commissions, when he got to that figure each month, he'd kind of ease off until the next month. But if he were close to the end of the month, he had only earned maybe $1,200 or $1,500, he'd work 16-hour days, weekends, and beat the bushes until he got to $3,000. We each have an internal set point. When we surpass that internal set point, our self-control may ease up or even touch the brakes to return to the comfort zone. Then we focus on external events to make it make sense. Remember Dan Gilbert's studies on subliminal programming and conscious attribution of cause and effect to make something make sense, even if it's not cause and effect. Now, here's a formula for a new set point. Look at the last 12 months, and month by month, look at income, all of your income. Choose the five highest months in average. Let's call that the high average. How do you raise it? Now, pick a new number. This is a stretch to be able to do it. Pick a number with a gulp factor, but that's doable within 90 days. Get clear on the value of your work. Raise your fees. Offer new products or service. For example, maybe add a group. Look at coaching as a program or a package. What's your signature system? What are the steps you need to take a client through to achieve the end results she wants? Do you want to do it as a program of 3 months or a two-day intensive or a six-month group? Here's the program. Here's what it'll include. Here's the investment. People are investing in the hope for change, for solutions, for the promise of new and better, to brainstorm with someone outside their system, with a wise mentor. use the language invest. Pay attention to the results the client gets. If you base your fees on what everyone else charges, you're going to undercharge. Do you feel good about your current fee? Not comfortable, but good, fulfilled, valued. Keep raising it until you do. Really pay attention to the results your client is getting. Get a client or a subscriber to buy something, to invest in something, even if it's very small, maybe just an ebook. Clients who make the leap from free to a tiny investment are small, but the percent of leap from any investment to more is huge. So get someone in your pipeline. Now, let's talk about sales and marketing. These are often the hardest part of any coaching or consulting business. When my good buddy, Art Wilson, who does the What's Next Exec, retreats with me, and you can see that at www.whatsnextexec.com, heard that I was transitioning from psychoanalytic practices over a decade ago, and he completed my professional coach training, he flew to Houston to take me to dinner. While he was at IBM, he was the lead salesperson in the country in a sales force of 10,000 people, 3 years in a row. When he left IBM to form his own consulting firm, it became one of the leaders of this industry as well, and he regularly makes five figures for a single day of work. When he was coaching me about sales and marketing of my business, I told him how anathema this was to me because for 25 years, as a psychiatrist psychoanalyst, I assiduously avoided marketing. It was not only frowned on, but it was also unethical. So my transition to coaching and the business context left me both unprepared and resistant. I shared my envy that his previous business had been about sales, so that primed him to launch his business. Do you know what this lead salesperson in the country, an eminently successful consultant who had spent serious time with world-class leaders said? He said, Dave, sales is the thing I most hate to do and still feel most uncomfortable with. I just have to do it. I looked at him incredulously. I said, Art, I guess that's good to know. Except the bad news is it doesn't get any better. A poem came to mind that contains the phrase, chop wood, carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood, carry water. Art and I then discussed ways to find ways to enjoy both, to reframe both sales and marketing to emphasize with pleasure the engagement and the benefits that it brings to make it a win-win. Now, I want to add a couple of things from the recent seminar series, but I want to add them at the end, so I want to be sure we have time for this. I want to talk a little bit about spirituality and coaching. One of my favorite descriptions of spirituality is from John Updike. He put it this way, "Pressed, I would define spirituality as the shadow of light humanity casts as it moves through the darkness of everything that can be explained." There does not have to be a split between spirituality and money. Spirituality and profitability can be very compatible. There's nothing intrinsically unspiritual about money. It's one of those assumptions like starving artist. Why would someone of exceptional talent have difficulty converting that ability into significant impulse, into significant income? They need a coach. Abundance, wealth, spirituality are synonyms. The antonyms, suffering, scarcity, non-spiritual. In fact, you may not really know what it is like to be spiritual unless you're wealthy. How free to be spiritually resonant can you be if you're worried about making the rent payment by the first of the month? Now, remember, wealthy does not automatically equate to worldly riches, but it must incorporate aspects of freedom and choice that is in the context of the experience of abundance and prosperity. If you spend some of your energy preoccupied with scarcity, with barely making it on income each month, you may not have carved out the space to experience true spirituality. If you're running and a bear is chasing you, you don't have the freedom of a contemplative moment to think great thoughts or create new ideas. Now, when someone says, I'm not in it for the money, I believe that person because I know the experience, unless it's a rationalization for not making much money. When you're truly immersed, passionate, and delivering immense value, this is synonymous with abundant income. It's the result when there's alignment. Having a fantastic experience of bringing value to people and making fantastic money are seamlessly interwoven in a spiritual path. If you're not making enough money, the question is, why are you not showing up? Where are you hiding out? Rich and spiritual are also synonyms. You will improve your health by creating less stress, as stress causes the body to be less healthy. You will create an attitude and an experience of abundance, which will also enhance wellness. Now, let's move to the practical. A business framework. Most of you know and have probably already done some of the fundamental things of establishing your coaching business. In fact, you know, I tell my coaching candidate students as we begin the class, there are only three things I would really seriously think about for you to get or do to start your business. One is a dedicated telephone line, landline with a voicemail and a business greeting. The other is a business card, and the other is a good story. So those are the three things you need. Now, here are some other things you may think about. Creating your own space to work without interruption so you can be totally immersed in the engagement with clients. Even if you decide to do face-to-face work, you're still going to have your initial contact most likely by telephone. So the same thing holds. A business name. And as I mentioned, a business credit card where you only put business expenses. This keeps it really easy and really simple for accounting. A business checking account where you deposit income and pay expenses. A payment system, an online payment system like PayPal or OneShop or anything, there are a number. I started out with PayPal, that you can set up to automatically bill each month. And you send to someone the link to that payment at PayPal as soon as they sign up with you. You don't have to have a website to do this. You can send them a link. You can send them your client information packet, and each of you are welcome to plagiarize mine under the coaching tab on my website as much as you'd like. You can send that as an attachment. I did that for way over a year before I did a website and asked them to get that back to you, the client information packet, and to make the first month's retainer payment prior to the first session, the first standing appointment you set up. Makes it really easy when you set it up as a recurring payment, because if they pay on the 10th, it automatically bills the credit card again the 10th of the next month until they unsubscribe, and you both have automatic records for this, accounting for it. And if as you evolve, you might think about, I would say, first having a blog and then a website. And the website can have a landing page as an enrollment access for each product, like a teleseminar. But that's down the pike. Now, business expense. This is something I want to expand on just a little bit. Many of you probably know about the matters regarding your taxes. Now, here's my preface so I can say what I want to say to you. In all matters regarding your tax return, be certain to consult a qualified professional. Now, listen up, because I rarely commit a non-deductible act. You can deduct all expenses related to the business of your coaching. You can deduct expenses related to the research and creation of your services and products, books, office supplies, computer. Marketing expense includes advertising, promotion, business-related meals and travel. Same with your writing. Why do you think so many novels are set in Rome, Paris, or Monte Carlo instead of downtown Newark? The key to each of these deductions, keep adequate records, document the business purpose. Review with your accountant the categories of deductible items so you can cue your radar to record each of them. And remember my dad's mantra, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. My son, who has his own capital management firm, has mentioned that repeatedly in his quarterly newsletter to clients. So I know it's taken, I know it's been passed on. professional recommendations to a client. When you discuss the potential client's situation, and then as a professional make a recommendation for coaching, you're acting professionally. You establish a structure. Your professional recommendation may include these: that the client engage in coaching, a frequency such as weekly, a structure such as a standing time, the length of each session, filling out your client intake form, including the contract, your specific fee, and your payment method options. Even if you have online, they can send you a check if they prefer. Hardly any of my clients ever do that. I recommend a monthly retainer paid in advance each month. I stipulate this fee for the client initially as we discuss coaching. I indicate that I would like to receive the paperwork, the client intake form, as I mentioned, with essential information about the client, including the contract, as well as the first month's fee prior to our first meeting. And again, you can access this client intake form and use as much of it as you like at mentorpath.com. And it's under the coaching tab, and it's the second drop-down. The contract portion is very simple. It's been vetted by a couple of attorneys. You won't need to make as much of a deal over this is not medical as I do. You have knowledge and experience that they're hiring you for. Tell them how you work. Be clear about your guidelines. When you schedule, give a couple of times as options for clients to choose. When you are looking at finding a time in the beginning of when to meet is a standing time. You don't want to be so flexible that it appears you're hungry for clients. Remember the two variables most correlated with client acquisition. This is from the study that we talked about before. Clarity and confidence in stating fees. The Wharton Business School study. Even when you're starting out, don't be overly accommodating. There's a natural tendency in the beginning to tell the client you can fit your schedule into theirs. Think about how the client perceives this. Remember the last time you pulled up to a restaurant at dinner hour and there were two cars in the parking lot? Then you wonder, what's the matter with this place? Your potential client may suddenly decide she's just not that hungry. It's important from the beginning that you position yourself as a professional. I would suggest not to give away your services to the client. When you do it once or twice, you've established a precedent and have trouble collecting for extra work, or to start with a real low fee and think, well, when I get clients, I'll move it on up. Your time is what you bill for so you can deliver value. Make sure you get paid for what you do. Now, sample sessions are part of marketing for some of you, especially in the beginning. So I'm not talking about those, but about a paying client. If a client asks you to meet him for lunch to discuss business, it's billable time. Be clear about the amount of time you'll work with a client each session. If you say 50 minutes session for each session, stick to it. A boundary, both you and the client own responsibility for that boundary and for managing time. We're also talking about a model that is downloaded, that is internalized for the client, for themselves, that's going to be adaptive in the real world. And if you wink at the time and say 50 minutes and go over to an hour and 15 minutes, that's not going to work in the real world because the client is not going to be able to say to his apartment manager or to his mortgage company, well, I'll pay you later. I'm going to be a little late this month. That doesn't work in the real world, so it shouldn't work in coaching. If you give away too much for too little, you are not in harmony with yourself, and it won't be harmonious for the client either. You don't sell. You don't ask for business. As a professional, you bring value. As a professional, you make a recommendation. Think of other professionals, your physician, dentist, CPA, financial professional. They don't try to sell you anything. They do an assessment, and on the basis of a professional opinion, make a recommendation. Then you choose to follow it or not. Same in my view with coaching. Now, here's my bias, and there are people I respect who do this very differently, but here's my bias. A dentist or a doctor doesn't offer you the platinum, gold, or silver package, and the big difference between the gold and the silver is if you get the gold instead of the silver, you do 5 more emails a week. Now, the professional offers an assessment and a recommendation. You decide if and when. You don't ask your doctor to bargain or to lower the fee or see if she'll accept 2 chicken, 3 bags of rice, and a massage instead of money. Your CPA doesn't ask you what you think you can afford to pay. You don't ask your dentist for a reduced fee or to spend less time with a procedure or do it real fast and charge you less. If I went to Behring Hardware here in Houston, real upscale place, and said, you know, I really need this garden hose. I feel like I could pay $3 for it. What do you think I'd hear after they started laughing? Now, to reiterate an earlier point, as a professional coach, you make a specific recommendation of how to work, the frequency, and what's involved. This includes how your fee, what your fee is, how and when to pay it. Now, also consider there are different forms of coaching services in addition to individual coaching that can leverage time, value, impact, and income. Group coaching, hugely fun, hugely beneficial to people, especially those who like the interchange and the interaction and the support in a group. Other kinds of groups. I do a mastermind group with the people who have trained with me as New Life Story Wellness Coaches, New Money Story Mentor Coaches. It's a prerequisite. We meet once a month, Fridays, the second Friday of each month for 2.5 hours. The last 45 minutes, I have an expert content contributor, somebody who's a nationally known person or an author. People don't decline an invitation to something like this to meet with a dozen coaches who are doing well, been well-trained or licensed and specialty certified, and it's just a fun, invigorating experience. Other kinds of things we do as coaches, facilitation, teleseminars, seminars and workshops, webinars, a coming thing. I mean, many of you have already experienced that, and I think it's evolving very fast. Speaking. Now, there are additional categories of services that you can offer. A virtual firm with referral fees for the specialist you refer. Products, including an e-course, paid website, book, e-book. And if you create a way to market yourself and your service that are fun, do it the way you like, you'll enjoy doing it, and your practice will grow with people who receive genuine value and are engaged by you because people buy a state of mind. People don't buy services or products. They buy a state of mind. They see you enjoying, and they see you believing in them, and they want to participate in that. Now, a not-so-secret to success is that you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you're still going to have to pay in some way. For example, if you incur debt in order to purchase something before you've earned the money, you simply end up paying more for it. Another non-secret, people who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who enjoy paying the price. I'm doing this right now. I love this. I think you're each going to make such a difference in so many lives. So this makes it easy to pay. In fact, it doesn't even feel like paying. The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate the experience of exactly what you want. And I think you'll experience, or already have, as you engage in a day in working with clients who you really want to work with, you're going to be energized after each engagement. You're going to be ending the day with more energy than you began. Now, let's talk a little bit about networking here. Networking is not just talking and meeting people and passing out business cards. It's the cultivating a mutually beneficial give-and-take win-win relationships. All things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to people they know, like, and trust. There's a law of 250. Each of us has a personal sphere of influence of about 250 people. It's been said, and there have been a number of studies on this, about 250 people will attend your wedding, your funeral, your 50th birthday. Everyone knows about 250 people in his or her life important enough to invite to their wedding or have show up at their funeral. The important thing is that other people also know about 250 people. So that means every time you go about making a new person a part of your network, you increase your personal sphere of influence by a potential 250 people. And since each of those 250 people also has a sphere of influence of another 250 people, adding this one new person to your network has indirectly put you into potential contact with 62,500 people. Now, there'll be some crossover and overlap, so even if you cut that number in half, or just to be safe, half again, even cut it in half one more time, at more than 7,800 people, the number still looks pretty good, and that's just for one person. So networking is not selling. Selling is the antithesis of networking. So some key points here. Networking is cultivating mutually beneficial give-and-take win-win relationships. We are not dependent on each other, nor are we independent of each other. We are all dependent with each other, interdependent. Each of us has a physical and personal sphere of influence of about 250 people. We'll probably do business with those we know, like, and trust. A system is the process of predictably achieving a goal based on logical and specific sets of stepwise principles. A system allows ordinary people to achieve extraordinary results predictably. This is an initial system I suggest to every coach I train at CTA in the initial class, essentially. Schedule a brainstorming session with yourself. A period of maybe 30, 45 minutes where there's no interruptions, get in a very creative mood to get in a stream of consciousness, write down everybody you know, every contact you have, personal, professional, church, school, business, everybody you know. And then, in another brainstorming session, cluster these into maybe dozen or 15 at a time where you can send notices about the beginning of your practice. And it's done in 12 or 15 at a time so you can do a follow-up call to be sure that they got it and to be sure that there aren't any questions. So this begins a process that I think is the first step of deciding a niche. A niche is not about some content, but a niche, I believe, can be first about your lowest hanging fruit, the relationships you already have. Because it's through relationships that referrals are made. Coaching is a relationship. Everything occurs through a relationship. So develop the existing relationships that you have first. Now, here's something to think about. Cross promotions. The oldest cross promotion on record was done by Benjamin Franklin over 200 years ago. He ran a special certificate in Poor Richard's Almanac. He cross promoted with Paul Revere, who gave a special deal on his pewterware if the person bought Poor Richard's Almanac. This served to increase the value of the magazine, and the consumer could buy the pewter for 2 cents less. This cross promotion worked out well for both parties. It was like the first coupon. Now let's talk for just a minute about intentions and commitment devices. As we think about being an accountability partner in coaching, commitment devices may be a consideration for us to use for ourselves. There have been studies on how people self-impose as well as co-create commitments for behaviors they know are in their best interest. We help our kids do this. A piggy bank is a commitment device. A suggestion. Write down at the beginning of each week your intentions for that week. Write down each day at the top of your calendar your intentions for that day. When people were asked what they intended to do, they're more likely to act in accordance with their answers. For example, asking people if they intend to vote increases the likelihood that they will by 25%. Asking people if they intend to buy a new car in the next 6 weeks increases purchases by 35%. other behaviors, 40,000 people were asked, do they intend to vote? And it increased that percent by people who voted by about 35%. Other behaviors with increased frequency, exercise, eating healthily, generating income. When you measure people's intention, you affect people's conduct. Remember that as coaches, we are choice architects. Focusing with a client on making the most informed and best choice possible in this moment and looking ahead at the impact of that choice on the future. So, for your coaching practice, there's a parallel process. The process of coaching with your clients will parallel other processes that they create. And they'll show you exactly what it's like to be them. And this is how the process will bring alive experiences that need to be addressed in coaching. And relevant to our topic, if they don't fill out the paperwork in coaching, look to see if they're filling out the paperwork in their life. If they don't pay in coaching, look for the parallel process. Again, your clients are always showing you, teaching you exactly what it's like to be them. They bring their issues to you and live them out loud in the coaching relationship. Some of them they're even consciously aware of. I mention this because it's in your and their best interest to find a way to talk about this process when it occurs. You can't ignore it. You have to challenge and address or highlight aspects with your clients. Now, let's look for just a couple of seconds at value versus sell. You're not selling anything but offering value. There are two factors necessary to make coaching work. Your client is willing to grow, and there's a gap between where the client is now and where they want to be. So, success trails. Decide how you want to expand. Then, pick out success trails to follow. Seek out a mentor, books, program, or resources to help you. Watch someone who's doing what you might want to do. Ask if you can take them to lunch or pick their brain or shadow them for a day to observe. But do it in your way. Make it your story. Now, back to the dinner table with Art. We left off at Chopwood Carry Water. He told me how he chose 5 very successful people and asked them to lunch or dinner to pick their brains about what he was about to do when he left IBM as a senior executive in the mid-80s and was about to begin his consulting practice. He advised me to do the same. It worked for both of us. Some business people with instant global recognition pick his brain for substantial picking fees. Create a support team, maybe an advisory board. Attend professional networking groups. Engage a mentor. Join a mastermind group. Don't be afraid to ask for help. I've had coaches I trained years ago call up and say, Dave, I'm stuck with a client. I need to buy an hour of your time. And my biggest challenge is to spend too much time to restrain myself from visiting and catching up and sharing stories about what they're up to. So there are 3 exercises in the addendum at the end of your outline that apply to this seminar specifically. And I added them in case they might be helpful to you. If you don't have a business name, there's an exercise called brainstorming for a business name. It might help you light on a name. It's how I came up with the name Interpath. There's a business plan template. It's something I would suggest for everyone, as we've talked in the seminar before. And about business blogging. And I think you've heard me say this, if I were going to start out today in a coaching business, the first thing I would do after the big 3, instead of a website or anything like that, I'd start with a blog, because blogs can go viral. And I mentioned to you that I had as many followers in 4 months of blogging as I did in the first 4.5 years of having a website with a newsletter and a sign-up. So remember this in closing. Joy is not a diversion from a successful journey. It's the pathway. Or, more succinctly, from my favorite grandmother, if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. Okay, we're in conversation mode now. There are a couple of more things I wanted to go over with you that I thought might be helpful from the seminar series I just completed to kind of add some value here, but I want to be sure that I address all the questions and the discussion that you have at this point. So I want to pause and look at what kind of thoughts or questions you have that might be helpful to discuss. So please, anyone. I can't have been all that clear. Anything that you'd like to talk further about? Anyone? Well, if not, I'm going to put us back on lecture mode. There's still some background noise. Someone may have walked away from the phone. I'm going to put us back on lecture mode for just a few minutes and add some things that I think might be helpful to you and then come back for a final 2 or 3 minutes for discussion. I think it's important. This is something it took me quite a while to really learn, is how you really need to talk about coaching, or how you need to present an offering that you have. I want to give you an example, because it's something that concretely you can go to, and if you have an ability to now, that's great, but if not, you can just remember what we talked about and go to this, because I want to give it as an example of some things that I'm talking about, because I think it'll really bring it alive. And I'm referring to the landing page that's at www.mentorpath.com/neuromarketing, NEUROMARKETING. And I want to refer to some things I've done here, because what we want to do with a client or for an offering like this is to first find the problem or the change, the pain or the challenge. To find what is the challenge, what is the pain or the problem that a client is dealing with that they're not able to quite do or be without you. Find a deep want or an interest that's not fulfilled, what they want but they're not getting. What are they not able to do or be themselves? Now, even though I mentioned we're not selling, I think it's helpful to think about it that way, that we're really offering value, making professional recommendations, but let's talk about actual selling, because we are selling our services. The foundation of effective selling is to highlight the continuing pain or unmet need if they don't purchase it. You've tried valiantly to do it yourself and reveal the logical reasons and give more information. So what I want to do is to go to a master formula for persuasion, to associate buying with getting pleasure, and especially matching the pain or the challenge with the benefit that someone gets in engaging with you. So, notice the first question. Notice that the first set of bullets on that landing page are the half dozen or so pain points of professionals. These are the most common things that I've heard professionals say, and I've dealt with many hundreds of professionals, and these are the most common issues that they have. So I wanted to crystallize those issues, to highlight them, to really capture what I've heard people say, to let them know I get it, this is what I hear, and to illustrate that way of talking about the challenge, the pain point, the things that they most want but aren't getting. Notice when I talk about the benefits that someone gets by those four teleseminar series, that they are matched bullet for bullet. In other words, the first bullet, the pain point, is matched by the first benefit, that the benefit relates directly to that first bullet. So there's a sequence. This is the sequence of storytelling that has been analyzed in great stories, from Abraham Lincoln's Gettysburg Address to Martin Luther King's. There have been a number of the great speeches of all time, and this is the pattern that is illuminated from that. What is and what could be. For what is, you're already articulating what they already know and experience. This creates a bond of understanding with you and the audience and readies them to hear your ideas for change. After you establish the baseline of what is, introduce your vision, what could be. The gap between the two will activate the audience and their listening mode. So the first set of bullets, bullet for bullet, is what is. First bullet, what is. The second bullet under benefits, what could be. So notice the first question. Do you have significant skill, expertise, and credentials, but not enough clients? That's a what is. Now, notice the corresponding bullet of what you'll learn. I will help you to systematically shape the primary reason people will buy professional services and products from you, a what could be. Question number two, what is? Do you have difficulty converting people who need your services into paying clients? Second bullet, what could be? I will share with you the mind and brain secrets of successful selling. Question three, what is? Do you lack a system to consistently bring in more clients to your professional practice? Bullets three and four, what could be? I will show you the four primary tools of influence and the six psychological principles of successful persuasion. So once you establish a gap, the rest of your presentation focuses on bridging it. So you'll notice the rest of the bullets are about the benefits and then the description of what that will be. So that's an example that I'm trying to bring alive to show you. And remember, we talked about the two most fundamental motivations that people have, the desire to avoid pain and the desire to seek pleasure. These two organizing principles of the brain, to minimize danger or pain, to maximize reward or pleasure, are overarching. If we associate positive emotions or reward with what we're doing, we get someone to sign on. If we associate negative emotions or pain, we avoid. If someone buys, they associate more pleasure with buying than not buying. If someone doesn't buy, they associate more pain to buying than not buying. Now, a master formula for persuasion to associate buying with getting pleasure and not buying with pain. Remember, we decide emotionally first, within a fifth of a second, and then attach logical reason to make it make sense. We buy emotionally and justify logically. A pleasure and approach response is synonymous with engagement. And engagement is a state of being positive, linked to being willing to do difficult things and develop new situations. Now, so there are three steps, as I mentioned. Find the problem or the pain or the challenge, the deep want or interest that's not being fulfilled. Two, find the motivations. Crystallize awareness by asking questions. Motivators are all emotional. Illuminate them by focus, by asking questions. That's how we help someone focus their mind, is by asking questions. Do you want to have the best? Do you want to have the best relationship, to be smarter, to be confident, to have the best practice? And three, show them how to solve the challenge, how to heal their discomfort by using your service or product. Make it compelling and real. They want emotionally, but justify logically. Remember, people don't buy services or products. They buy states. And the most successful professionals are those who can help people change states of mind. Why do you think entertainers are paid multiples of what educators are paid? Whenever we engage with someone, they have an aha moment. It changes their state of mind. We want to start that from the beginning. Whatever we associate to something determines our behavior. To change behavior, change the associative link. Remember, again, I'll say and reiterate, people buy for emotional reasons and justify by logic. And I want to say this to close and keep it open for questions in just a moment. The most significant thing that great influencers and persuaders understand, keep in mind, and communicate. Here it is. It's not about you, it's about them. And remember your primary question. What is it you want to accomplish through this? Now, what this simply means is somebody asks you what you do, they are not interested in hearing about your credentials, your experiences, what all you've done, the training you've had. They don't care. They are interested in what's in it for them. And that's really important to remember. So keep it about them and what their benefits will be in working with you. Okay, we're back to conversation mode. First, I want to say thanks very much for your participation in the series on a branded coaching business. I have respected and enjoyed your questions, your comments, and they've been informative to me in helping me shape some of the material, so I appreciate it very much. I hope I've addressed your questions and helped you have other questions that you might not have even known to have 4 weeks ago. And that's one of the things that determines the quality of our life is our questions get better. So any other comments or thoughts or questions in the last couple of minutes if we have anyone?
Hi, David. It's Cherise. Hi, it's Cherise. I just want to say thank you. You cleared up a lot of things for me. I became certified in May through a different program.
Uh-huh.
But this touched a lot more. Like you said, they didn't really touch on the money aspect, and I was confused about fees. But this really helped a whole lot to show me that I was definitely on the right path for where I was going.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate that, Cherise, very much. Ed, did I hear you in the background?
Yeah, thank you. I realized this as I was getting ready for tonight's class, and this is the second class with you, and I've taken the other certification with Lori, but it occurred to me that what you all have done beyond anything on the written page is you've taught me that I'm going to be selling me and the relationship. Anybody can pick up a book, but you really have come a long way to gain my confidence in all of this and to move forward, and I really appreciate that.
That's what someone purchases, and you just said that very succinctly. Someone purchases their confidence in you as a client, and there has been considerable research to show that confidence is much more related to success than competence. So that's why I want to be sure that we include that. Confidence is a state of mind. It's my last or next to last blog. Look at that. I mentioned that before. I think it's really important. The most important thing that we can do or be for a client is to believe in them. And that's why I work only with clients in whom I totally believe. And they'll teach us both why. And the process will be enlightening and transformative for them. So thank you all very, very much. I appreciate all your input. If there are any questions that you think of, let me know. I'll be happy to answer them. Shoot me an email. And I'll be eager to hear how things go and how you sort of, how our four seminars kind of marinate over time in you to see what difference it makes. So I hope to hear from you. Thank you very much. Enjoy our time together. Bye now.